Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
Hi, it's David Locke, host of Locked On NBA, founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. Eastern Conference preview number two today. We hit on the Pacers, the Heat, the Knicks, the Magic, the Sixers young squad, the Raptors, the Wizards, and the Bucks. So lots of interesting stories. This is one of the things I'm most proud of the Locked On Podcast Network for. These hosts are your local experts on the teams, know them better than anyone, give insight and breakdown that's unequaled. When the biggest stories in the sports world happen, the local experts are on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are so excited to have these guys giving you this preview. If you missed Eastern Conference number one and Western Conference number one, they were done last week. They're up on the Locked On NBA feed. Today's show is brought to you by SeatGeek. Promo code LOCKED gets you $20 off your first purchase, as well as Warby Parker, warbyparker.com/locked. You get the five glasses home try on. Please make sure you subscribe to your local NBA Locked On podcast with a local expert on your team, and enjoy Eastern Conference preview number two.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
For each of these NBA teams, I've asked the local host to answer a collection of questions about their team, the biggest storylines, breakout players, what they expect out of the roster, biggest changes, who will think of differently. They're all coming at you, and then after each one, we'll get a look from Josh Lloyd, the Locked On Fantasy basketball expert, on which of these players you want for your fantasy basketball teams. So let's get it started with the Indiana Pacers. Adam and Mr. Tony East do a great job with Locked On Pacers, and they kick off Eastern Conference preview number two.
Hey, everybody. It's Tony East, one of the hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast here. My co-host Adam Friedman will not be joining me today for this season preview for the Pacers, unfortunately, but I will still be here to help you get all your storylines for the team as we head into the season. As we head into camp, I think there's a couple things you should keep an eye out for. Number one is Glenn Robinson, one of the promising young players on the team, is injured, and now the big storyline is how are they going to replace his minutes? The thought was going to be that he would play 24 minutes off the bench at the backup three, and now the challenge has become, who can play those minutes? Will Bojan Bogdanovic, the starter, end up playing a bigger role, and will Lance Stevenson slide to the three in the reserve units? Will rookie TJ Leaf step in and get some of that time, or will some of the guys on the fringe of the roster have to step up and really step in? And in the first preseason game that they had against the Bucks a few nights ago, TJ Leaf came in off the bench and played a little three, as well as Alex Poitras, who's signed on a two-way contract, and Daquan Jones, who is a training camp deal guy. He even played 3 minutes. So there's a lot of options for the team. Thankfully, a lot of their fringe roster guys are wing players or combo-y wing players. So who really knows how they're going to fill that spot? But there's a lot of it's going to be a tough situation to see who steps in. I think Lance Stevenson sliding up from the two to the three is the most obvious solution, with Corey Joseph, the backup point guard, going to the backup two, and then maybe Joe Young, the third string point guard, becoming the backup point guard. But that will be interesting to see with Glenn Robinson out for 2 months. Who really knows how that's going to go down? The second most important storyline in training camp is just that. Who is going to be on the roster as these training camp battles unfold? They have 7 guys in training camp who are not on guaranteed contracts. They only have 13 guys on guaranteed deals, plus their two-way guys. So who of the other 5 are going to get those last 2 spots between Damian Wilkins and Ben Moore and Jared Utoff and a few others? And no one really knows. I think Damian Wilkins, who played 24 minutes in the first preseason game, is kind of a lock just because he's probably the most competent player of the group. But it's going to be interesting to see. We'll have to find out as the preseason goes along if any of them are shining better than others and may make the team. The Pacers season is going to be interesting because no one really knows what their goals are. Are they going to try to succeed and make the playoffs, or are they going to, you know, kind of play some young guys for development and tank for a higher playoff seed? I don't like saying the word tanking, but that's kind of what they'll be doing. But for the best case scenario for them to succeed is that Miles Turner takes a large step forward and becomes maybe a 20-point-a-game scorer, and Oladipo becomes more efficient as a scorer on the wing, And this Pacers team could really fly up to that 35-40 win range just because they'll have such a cohesive starting lineup with a bunch of good shooters and Oladipo creating shots. And that could allow them to be, you know, that 7th or 8th seed in the Eastern Conference, which I think would be the best-case scenario in that situation. If they want to develop some young players, maybe getting TJ Leaf some minutes as the backup three with Glenn Robinson out, as well as playing Sabonis a lot and Miles Turner just to get, you know, kind of their core really getting a lot of minutes as much as possible. The worst-case scenario for the Pacers is that all these shooters they have in their starting lineup, Bojan Bogdanovic, Darren Collison, Thaddeus Young, Miles Turner, all take a step back shooting and they can't space the floor and their offense completely clogs up. And then on the bench, Lance Stephenson can't use his normal creation skills to get anything going and their offense is just comes to a stall. Their defense will be just okay the whole season, so their offense is really what a lot of this hinges on. And if it can't work like it looks like it will on paper, then the team's going to really struggle and Nate McMillan's going to have a challenge trying to find a way to get this team to score points. The player on the Pacers I think the most likely to be thought of differently come season's end is going to be Victor Oladipo. Miles Turner seems like an obvious candidate to grow into a much better player, and you've probably heard at least his name once or twice in the national media this summer as a guy who might have a breakout campaign. But Victor Oladipo hasn't been talked about that as much. He's kind of been talked about more as trade fodder in the Paul George trade. However, this is the first time he'll be on a stable organization. Sorry, Orlando and Oklahoma City fans. And he'll have an opportunity to really handle the ball and be the player he was in college. And I think he really could succeed in that role as a creator and a shooter and just the primary go-to guy on offense for the Pacers. And by the end of the year, I think people are going to think he's more worth that $21 million he's being paid as opposed to now, where no one really thinks he's worth that money. And I think he could really prove to be a good primary option for any team. The player whose career trajectory is most likely to be impacted in a good or bad way, I would say, is Miles Turner, of course, just because he could take, you know, massive steps forward and just be an amazing offensive player. Glenn Robinson, the third, is also a good one. Not many of you know this, but he shot almost 40% from three last year and was very effective in his minutes, especially when he came in and started for Monte Ellis finally. But with the most riding on their career, I'd say it's Thaddeus Young, just because he's a trade candidate and has a player option. Last year, he almost shot 40% from three before hurting his wrist, and he only shot 14% from three after the wrist injury. We'll have to see how well he does coming off that injury and coming into a fake contract season just because he has that player option and also being a trade candidate. It's going to be interesting to see how a lot of these guys go just because they have a lot of expiring contracts that a lot of people could have a career trajectory kind of changing season. Rookies who might have an impact. TJ Leaf did not look very good in the first preseason game, but hey, it's preseason. Anything can happen. But him and Ike Anigbogu, who both played together at UCLA, both look like they could have an impact at some point in their careers. However, this year, it's not looking as like they're going to be too impactful. I'm not even sure that Ike will play at all. He was kind of hurt before he got drafted. TJ Leaf, while he plugs in for Glenn Robinson's minutes, may not play when Glenn comes back, especially given his defensive struggles. But there'll be two guys you should keep an eye on just because, of course, the Pacers might be in a developing season as they don't have the roster that looks like it's trying to compete for the playoffs. If I had to guess how this season ends, I think the team starts stronger than people think just because they have a very cohesive group of talent, but kind of falls off as some of their younger guys get acclimated to the NBA and the team has some injuries or anything like that. It could really hurt them just because they have some good players, but one hit in their rotation, they'd be in a lot of trouble. I would say the season they end with about a record of about 33-49 or maybe a little worse than that. That's probably a higher range of my guess, but I think this will be a fun season to watch for the Pacers. You're going to see Miles Turner rampage and score a lot of points, and I hope you guys enjoy watching Pacers basketball this season.
I was actually at dinner the other night with a scout, and he was talking about having seen Miles Turner and how great Miles Turner looks and just what an incredible skill set he has. So we'll see what he can do with this team. Tony, not very optimistic on that 33 win level. Josh Lloyd's probably optimistic about the Miles Turner fantasy season. Here's Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball.
Hi, guys. This is Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball here to talk about the Indiana Pacers. Miles Turner has looked fantastic in preseason. I love him as a second-round pick in fantasy this year. And I think Victor Oladipo is going to be a pretty comfortable top 50 guy who does have top 30 upside. Darren Collison looks like he has asserted himself as the starting point guard, so I like him as a late point guard if you didn't get those numbers earlier. While Thad Young and Lance Stephenson are players you can get late. I'm not totally sold on Stephenson being a standard fantasy guy, but Thad is. You can get those steals from him, even though there is the risk of him potentially being limited or traded at some point during the season.
Well, not particularly high hopes for the Indiana Pacers, but the Miami Heat are one of the great questions of this upcoming season. Is the second half of last year replicable for the Heat? They signed a lot of the same guys, added a piece or two. Wes Goldberg and David Ermil, host Locked On Heat, do a wonderful job on the Heat. Let's see what they have to say of what they think this season will be.
I'm Wes Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil.
And you're listening to Locked On Heat. Miami finished off last season at just 41-41, and despite a strong second half during which the team went 31-10, they missed the playoffs for the second time in three seasons.
Their offseason didn't go quite as expected either, and the Heat missed out on acquiring Gordon Hayward in free agency. Their plan B was to re-sign key free agents and add versatility in the front court, which they did by adding Kelly Olynyk previously with the Boston Celtics and lottery pick Bam Adebayo of Kentucky.
With a retooled roster and an underrated defense and versatility at every position, Miami is poised to build on last season's success. It'll be a true test of the value of cohesiveness, and they're one of the most intriguing teams in the NBA. Let's start with the two or three biggest storylines going into camp. The first being, is last season's second half success sustainable?
Yeah, after a strong second half, it's curious to see whether or not Miami will be able to duplicate that at the start of the season. Also, do Deion Waiters and James Johnson have another level they can reach? Those were the two free agents that Miami added, the two biggest names that they added from re-signing them from last year. Can they take this team to another level?
They both just signed four-year contracts. They're going to be with the Heat for this foreseeable future, and they certainly hope so. If they develop in a way that the Heat hope, they could become bargains. And the third thing here is, what will Eric Spoelstra decide to do at the power forward position? What kind of rotation will he use? Will he start Josh Richardson and Justice Winslow, or Justice Winslow, or will he start James Johnson or Kelly Olynyk? He's got a lot of options there.
Absolutely. So what do you think is the best-case scenario for this team, Wes?
Well, the best-case scenario is that we immediately see the team we saw over the last 41 games of last season. The chemistry still clicks, and if not, even more so than it was. Waiters and Goran Dragic, they make a perfectly complementary backcourt, and the surrounding wings and bigs make the most of their opportunities to score at the rim, Hassan Whiteside namely, or along the perimeter, basically everybody else in the roster, as this team looks to play a four-out offense. While the rest of the Eastern Conference and the league struggles to find their place, the Heat, as one of the best-conditioned and most cohesive units, starts off hot, and then they maintain at least a 500 pace for the rest of the season. Against all odds, they manage a top-four playoff seed and pull off a win in an opening round series with their home court advantage. But what do you think would lead to the worst-case scenario, David?
Well, the worst case would be that it's the exact opposite, that all of last year was a mirage, and that the strong showing in the second half isn't something that's sustainable for this current roster. So assuming injuries don't play into any role, Deion Waiters decides that his new contract makes him the most qualified to lead the team, and all of a sudden the drive-and-kick game that worked so well last year in combination with Dragic, he just decides to drive and shoot completely, reverting to an even lower field goal percentage at the rim than he's normally shown. I can't see a scenario where James Johnson, who worked out really diligently this summer, struggles, but let's assume he's just not as sharp from the perimeter or as dynamic a playmaker if he starts alongside Waiters and Whiteside. But then Justice Winslow, he'll continue to struggle as he comes back from injury. Maybe his shooting takes a step back, and maybe we might start to see him as a potential lottery pick bust. In the meantime, Josh Richardson just doesn't develop. The weight of his new contract proves to be a burden. We've seen him struggle with confidence issues. And if he can't handle that pressure, maybe he might start to struggle a little bit. So for the first time in a year, we'll start to see this team kind of unravel. Maybe some emotional wear and tear, in-house fighting, something that Miami isn't normally seeing. And all of a sudden, unmet expectations, bloated contracts, and this becomes a team with a very bleak future.
I hope that doesn't happen. Let's talk about some players that are most likely to be thought of differently at the end of this season. I'm going to go with Justice Winslow. This is a big year for Winslow. He was limited to just 18 games in his second year, and he's coming off of a shoulder surgery. Last season was very much a worst-case scenario for Justice Winslow, and he can only go up from there. All reports indicate that he's been working on his jump shot, and there's reason to believe that he'll get more open looks in Miami's drive-and-kick offense. Defensively, the Heat missed Winslow last year. His size and his athleticism and his instincts will be welcomed additions. At 21 years old, he still has a ton of upside, and I think we see more of that in his third season. What about you?
For me, I think it's Deion Waiters. I know I just illustrated the worst-case scenario as far as Deion's concerned, but I think he lives up to the best-case scenario. I think he's going to be comfortable with that new contract. I think he's finally found a quote-unquote home here in Miami. and he's assured of his place among the league's best players. I know that sounds a little bit hyperbolic, but I think it applies when it comes to Deion. Our prediction has been for a while that he'll lead the team in scoring, and I think he'll continue to produce the kind of statistics that match the level of his confidence. And I think fans will recognize him as the talent he was supposed to be when he was drafted by Cleveland in the top five. So I think Waiters Island will replace Dubai as the ideal destination for little celebrities and the world's upper crust, and they'll be charged double for their earlier lack of faith when they try to join.
All right, let's talk about some players whose career trajectory is most impacted by this season. And I have Deion Waiters as my guy. Look, most of the Heat's players are locked up for the next several years, so this isn't going to come down to who's going to be re-signed, who's not going to be living in Miami next year, right? So rather, I wanted to go with somebody that just signed a fresh new deal, and that is Deion Waiters. He's got a chance to prove that he can be a lead scorer and that he can live up to his high draft status. Kevin Durant this summer said that he thinks Waiters is finally doing what he's supposed to be doing. I'm not going to overlook that from the Finals MVP. That means something coming from Kevin Durant. Waiters has a chance to flip the narrative from a disappointment to a feel-good story, and that's what this season for him is about.
For me, it's actually Winslow. This is a big year for him. Obviously, he missed most of last season with a shoulder injury. He struggled even when he was there, kind of tried to take on too much. And because of the contract situation you just mentioned, I think re-signing him isn't necessarily the guarantee a lot of people assume it is. This is his last best chance to prove that he's a valuable player, one deserving of that top 10 selection a few years ago, and that he deserves a big payday. You know, it's not necessarily about starting for him, but rather just handling whatever role Eric Spoelstra gives him. Whether it's coming off the bench or as a starter, he needs to prove that he's capable of handling handling the ball at a consistent level, and that he's capable of continued growth.
Let's talk about some of the rookies. The Heat drafted Bam Adebayo at the 14th pick in the draft. They signed Matt Williams from UCF, go Knights, and Derek Walton Jr., point guard from Michigan. None of these guys may factor into the rotation in a big way, but do you think either of them can make an impact in their first year?
I don't really see it, to be honest with you. I know Matt Williams with his sharp shooting is something that Miami would love to have develop at a higher level, but they've already got Wayne Ellington on the roster. They don't really need somebody like that. And Adebayo, I think, is still very much a rough product. He was a guy who was kind of forced into the post during his tenure at Kentucky, but we've seen some perimeter shooting from him, and they tried using him as a playmaker in summer league. So I'm curious to see whether or not he's able to duplicate that success, but I just don't see him having much of a role this season.
I think Walton might make the biggest impact out of all these guys. He's on a two-way contract, and the Heat are going to want to get him to the 42 games that he should be that he can play. I think it's 42 games. And so he's going to get on the court, and it might come in situations where there are injuries. Let's say Goran Dragic goes down, and he's really Miami's only true point guard, right? Dragic is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If that's the case, you could see Derek Walton getting called up from the D-League, playing the NBA portion of his two-way contract, and doing so maybe not as a starting point guard, but as a reserve point guard who's getting some minutes, and he might be able to do some things in a couple games here and there. So, David, what's your best guess on how this season ends?
Well, I think that the chemistry and conditioning will play a factor. Miami's always worked harder than most teams, to be honest with you, and they've always put a premium on being one of the best conditioned teams in the league. So I think that chemistry from the second half of last year kind of carries over. It'll be taken to another level, I think, and they start off very hot. I think with this roster, one that's more proven, deeper, and more well-rounded than last year's, I think 48 wins and a playoff berth is a realistic goal.
I'm with you. Look, the Heat have some key advantages heading into the season. They've got the cohesiveness. They have one of the two best coaches in the East, and it's by a wide margin. And the fact that the conference has seen a lot of turnovers. A lot of stars have gone west, or some have switched teams. There's reasons why that 30-11 record is more reflective of this true Heat team than that 11-30 start from last season. I think this team competes for, like you said, something around 50 wins, give or take. This is going to be a team that 50 wins might be realistic within like the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season. This was Wes Goldberg and David Ramil, your host for Locked On Heat. Thanks for listening.
What's getting really interesting in the Eastern Conference previews is the second tier of the East. So we have Cleveland and Boston, and then we'll hear from both Washington and Toronto upcoming on today's show. And so that's everyone's kind of fourth. But Charlotte said they thought they might be fourth when you had that. That was before the Nicholas Batum injury. And now you have Miami talking about 50 wins. And we'll have the Bucks later in this show as well. So where do all these teams fit? And what is – do any of them break the top four? And then what is that bottom half and that battle is getting pretty interesting in the Eastern Conference. Let's get Josh Lloyd's fantasy look at the Heat.
Hi guys, it's Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball here to talk about the Miami Heat. Josh Richardson has looked fantastic in the preseason. I love him as a late pick with his ability to get steals, blocks, and threes. And run the offense at times also makes him a fantastic late pick. Whiteside is strong in the second round and Goran Dragic in those early rounds as well. And nothing to dissuade me from taking him. James Johnson, I think it's going to be hard for him to put up the same numbers that he put up last season, especially with the return of Justice Winslow and the addition of Kelly Olynyk. Speaking of Olynyk, he's looked good as the backup four or starting four and backup five. Not sure he's going to get quite enough playing time to be a standard league guy. And I could say the same for Tyler Johnson, but they are worth looking at with last pick, same as Justice Winslow, although I am a little bit further down on him than what some others are, especially with the way that Richardson is carrying himself throughout the preseason.
Thank you, Josh. The Knicks are up next, but before we talk about the Knicks, let's talk about how you're going to any of these games this year, and hopefully you're doing it the right way, which is with SeatGeek. It's how I get tickets when I'm on the road. If there's a game I want to go see, if there's a hockey game or a concert when we're on the road, I always check it out to make sure, and I use SeatGeek. And here's why. Because one, first you just download the SeatGeek app, and it's simple, it's straightforward, it's right there for you. Then once you've downloaded the SeatGeek app, it compiles all of the tickets from all around the area for you, so you don't have to go be talking to multiple people or looking. Remember the old days when you had a broker and you wondered whether it got you the right stuff? That's over. Finally, ticket scores. This is what makes SeatGeek unique. Each ticket has a ticket score, which tells you what its value is inside that arena in case you don't know the arena. Once you've purchased your ticket, it's secure, it's on your phone, and it is taken care of. The promo code is LOCKED, and that gets you $20 back after your first purchase. So it's simple. One, download the SeatGeek app. Two, go to the settings tab and enter in the promo code LOCKED. Three, find the event you want to go to, set your price alert, set your whatever alert for you so it's there. Then you get your ticket score. You know what it's going to be. You get it. It's secured. It's on your phone, and you're happy, and you're going to the game, and you're like, Locke, thanks so much for letting me know about SeatGeek. That's what you're thinking right there. Well, maybe something of the sort. All right, let's go to the Knicks and see what James Marseda has to say about the Carmelo Anthony-less New York Knicks.
The 2017-18 New York Knicks will be defined largely by the absence of two towering figures in Knicks basketball. We're living in a post-Melo world, people, which means that Kristaps Porzingis is now the man. And the question becomes, how does he handle that added responsibility both on and off the court? Not only will defenses be focusing mainly in on him, but so will the media. We're also living in a post-Phil Jackson world. How will the Knicks play now that Hornacek is free to coach as he pleases and is not living under the tyranny of the triangle? Is 2017 the year that the Knicks finally get with some of the successful trends of modern professional basketball? In order for them to realize their best-case scenario, I think four key things are going to need to happen. Kristaps Porzingis is going to need to take a superstar leap. Frank Ntilikina is going to need to show that he is indeed the point guard of the future, if not the present. Tim Hardaway Jr. needs to show that his lucrative contract was not a mistake, and his production needs to match the number he's getting paid. And the team as a whole needs to buy in on defense. If you're thinking about what the worst case scenario is with the Knicks, I think you're looking at Porzingis and Billy Hernan Gomez's growth being stunted by the hashtag logjam of centers. Not only is Joakim Noah still here with his quite large contract and underwhelming production, but we've also got Kyle O'Quinn. We also have Enes Kanter, who has come over in the trade for Carmelo Anthony. How is that going to affect Billy Hernan Gomez's time? Is he going to be behind Enes Kanter in the rotation? Will Kristaps Porzingis get enough time at center with this glut of centers? Worst case scenario, the answer to those questions is no. Chris Epps will not get enough time at center, and Billy's growth will be stunted. Worst case scenario, Hardaway underperforms his contract, and the Knicks are stuck with not one, but two albatross contracts, the first being Joakim Noah's. Frank Ntilikina would look completely overwhelmed as an NBA point guard. I don't think this is going to happen, but worst case scenario, and it would prove that the Knicks did in fact make a mistake by drafting him over Dennis Smith Jr. This is the Knicks, so, you know, the apocalypse is in play here. If you're talking worst case scenarios, we're seeing impatience in the front office. Jeff Hornacek gets fired midseason and is replaced with Kurt Rambis as the head coach. Not only that, James Dolan, who has previously admitted that he knows nothing about basketball, will appoint himself the emperor of basketball operations, and he will be solely responsible for everything the Knicks do as an organization. The player most likely to be thought of differently at the end of this season, I'm tempted to say that's Tim Hardaway Jr. The Knicks were absolutely savaged by the media for his contract, and they absolutely paid more than they could have given the market for Hardaway. But I think he'll put up some surprising numbers when he's given a full-time starter's role. More than him, though, I think Frank Ntilikina is really someone who's going to change people's opinions of him. People don't know a lot about him. Dennis Smith Jr., who was drafted after him, had a really outstanding summer league. So there's already been plenty of squawking that the Knicks made a huge mistake and that Ntilikina is not any good and blah, blah, blah. But I think people will be surprised by his natural point guard skills, his perimeter shooting, and his defense. If you're talking about players whose career trajectory will be most impacted this season, for better or for worse, I think you're looking at the two young men who came over in the Carmelo Anthony trade. Doug McDermott and Enes Kanter. They're both 25, and there's a perception that what they are now is what they will be forever. Primarily, that means that their defense will never be adequate. Enes Kanter is an excellent offensive player, but he hasn't shown an ability to stay on the floor against other teams' best lineups because of his defense. Doug McDermott has struggled outside of his spot-up shooting to provide much value. But they'll be given lots of opportunity this year to show what they can do. If you're talking about rookies who will have an impact, the number one rookie we're looking at is Frank Ntilikina, the point guard out of France, and that's for better or worse. You know, he's going to be given lots of opportunity to play. The Knicks haven't had perimeter defense since as long as I can remember. And if he can provide a smidgen of that, he could have a positive impact. You're also looking at second-round pick Damian Dotson, a shooting guard who I think will sneak up on some people. He's got a real sweet stroke from beyond the arc, and he hustles on defense. He might have a hard time getting minutes with Tim Hardaway Jr. and Courtney Lee ahead of him. He's going to be behind them on the depth chart, but I think he might make a little bit of noise. Looking at everything as a whole, if I had to guess how this season ends, this is the first year in a post-Melo world, which I think means the ball might move slightly better on offense. They could be slightly sharper on defense, although they brought in a lot of people who don't play much defense. It is KP's third year, so he figures to be improved as a player, but he's going to get more attention than he ever has before without Carmelo Anthony on the court with him. So I think, given that they finished 31 wins last year, 32 wins the year before, with some improvements from KP and some improvements in team play, but you know you are missing Carmelo Anthony scoring, you're looking in that same neighborhood of 30 to 35 wins. I say the Knicks get the second pick if they get lucky in the lottery for the first time since Patrick Ewing. Otherwise, they'll finish somewhere in the 5 to 8 range.
I don't disagree with James at all, but I think it's an incredible concept that for everybody talking about how great Carmelo is, you take Carmelo off that team and they think their win total is going to be the same. And they might be right because Carmelo was terribly inefficient last year. Minus pack player. He's gotten worse each of the last 3 years pack-wise. Pack is points above average created. The concept is you take the NBA player compare his possession usage to what an average player would do with the same amount of possessions and how many points you score above or below average. Carmelo would score 0.7 points below an average collection of players who use those same possessions. And maybe the Knicks are going to have that average collection and actually be a little better than people realize. Negative players are incredibly detrimental to teams. So it'll be interesting to see if the Knicks turn out to possibly be a little bit better than you might think. Josh Lloyd gives us the fantasy take on New York.
Hi guys, this is Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball, here to talk about the New York Knicks. Kristaps Porzingis, I think, is a really strong second round pick. He gets some extra usage and scoring this year without Carmelo Anthony. Maybe it hurts his efficiency, but he's a strong second round pick to me. While Tim Hardaway, I think, is a guy you can get at pretty decent value with a real shot to be a top 75 player, especially if Hornacek puts the ball in his hands and lets him run some point guard. The center position is up in the air between Billy Hernangómez and Enes Kanter there. I think that Kanter's probably going to get most of the minutes, or at least the slight majority there of the minutes, and he's a guy that I would target, especially in rotisserie leagues, while Hernangómez's appeal has definitely been limited. As for point guards, Frank Ntilikina, probably not going to have that value to start the season, but I don't hate him as a last pick just to see how that goes down. If you want to take a flyer on someone, Michael Beasley, who could earn some minutes as a backup four or starting three, he does have the ability to put up some points and rebounds and some decent defensive stats. So he is a name to pay some attention to later in your drafts.
Josh does such great work. Locked On Fantasy Basketball should be a staple for you if you're a daily or a fantasy player in basketball, or if you just want to know about the game. Puts out a daily show. He's great. All right, the next three teams are really fascinating. We've got the 76ers, actually the next four, 76ers, Raptors, Wizards, Bucks. What order the Sixers are probably the fourth of those group. But let's go. Here, let's go. Keith Pompey, great dude, has super guests on Locked On Sixers. Fun guy to hang out with, and you get to do it if you listen to Locked On Sixers. Philadelphia Inquirer writer as well, knows this team beautifully, and gives us his take on where the Sixers stand in our Eastern Conference preview. Remember, that promo code on SeatGeek is LOCKED. I'll give you another good one coming up here in a second.
Welcome to Locked On 76ers. I'm your host, Keith Pompey. You know, just give it a little, you know, season preview. You know, right now, the big storyline with the 76ers are, can these young guys make the playoffs? A lot of people are talking about the Sixers in regards to making the playoffs. You know, you have a guy like Joel Embiid who's coming back from a season-ending torn meniscus in his left knee. Then you have Ben Simmons, who missed all of his rookie year last year, with a Jones fracture in his right foot. And then you have Markelle Fultz, who was the first overall pick of this past draft. Now, Ben Simmons was the first overall pick of the 2016 draft. So right now, there's a lot of excitement in regards to the 76ers with the young guys. You know, a lot of people think that this team can make a run, that this team can make the playoffs. You know, now it's funny because the 76ers won 28 games last year, and that was their by far their best win total over a four-year span. So this year, there's a lot of expectations with this team, in regards to making the playoffs in a weak Eastern Conference. Now, what has to happen? Best case scenario. You know, what has to happen is that, you know, Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz have to grow up and they have to mature quickly. Because, you know, the last time that a team had two rookies, because, you know, Ben Simmons is still considered a rookie, being as though he didn't play last year. The last time a team had two rookies in a backcourt to make the playoffs was the Houston Rockets, and that was over 20 years ago. So this is going to be a hard thing for him. Also, they're going to have to, you know, get production from J.J. Redick, who is a free agent that they pick up they had, and Amir Johnson. And, you know, people say, don't say injuries. But Joel Embiid has to stay healthy. If Joel Embiid does not stay healthy, the Sixers will not make the playoffs. And see, that leads me to the worst case scenario. Now, like, if Joel Embiid only played in 31 games last year, you know, there's a possibility that he'll be on a minutes restriction. If Joel Embiid cannot play a lot of games this year, that's going to disrupt the Sixers. So far in the preseason, you know, the Sixers' defense has been whack. I mean, that's the best way to say it. They struggled mightily because they do not have a rim protector in Embiid. Also, J.J. Redick has had a tough time coming off of screens. I take that back. When he's playing with Ben Simmons and when he's playing with Markelle Fultz, he wasn't at one preseason game. The other time when they had some of the veterans in there, J.J. looked better. But that goes to say that this team is young. These young guys, the young Markelle Fultz and the Ben Simmons, they really just don't know the NBA game yet. So if they're injured, if Embiid's injured, and if these two guys don't mature, I mean, I'll say they might get 30 wins, 35. I'll give them 35, but I don't see them making the playoffs. Now, the player who will make the biggest difference is Embiid, and again, I said that before. You know, he just has to remain healthy. His trajectory, like his career trajectory is the thing. I'm telling you, if you take Joel Embiid off the 76ers squad, they're not that good. I mean, what you have is you have two young guards, who I mentioned before, but you really don't have the all-star type of guy that can get you over the hump. Now, I'm not saying that Markelle Fultz or Ben Simmons can't be all-stars down the road, but right now, Joel Embiid should be an all-star. You know, my guess on how this season is going to end is basically the 76ers are going to play hard. I think that Embiid is going to stay healthy. Ben Simmons is going to prove. Early on, they're going to struggle, but I think they're going to be in a hunt for the playoffs. But I think down the stretch, they're going to lose a couple vital games, and that's going to knock them out of the playoff picture. I want to thank you all for listening to this preview of Advancing the 76ers. And, hey, listen to – make sure you come to Locked On Sixers. You subscribe to this podcast. I'm the only one in Philadelphia that comes to you 5 days a week. Scratch Philly. I'm the only one in the country who covers the 76ers who comes to you 5 days a week. And I'm telling you, this is by far the best podcast going, covering the 76ers. The Locked On Network is by far the best podcast group in the country. Have a nice one.
Love the team spirit there from Keith. He's fun. Good dude. All right. I'm befuddled why we all know that young guys can't win, young guys don't defend, and yet we think the Sixers are going to make the playoffs. Is that a statement on the Sixers, or is that a statement on how bad we think the Eastern Conference is? I think there's somebody that's a surprise in the East, and I think Philadelphia struggles. I know it's in vogue. I know we love it. It's fun, but the idea that Embiid's going to play – that Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz are going to be able to figure this thing out right away seems to me to be a pretty outlandish stretch. So the question to me is, like, who's that team in the East that surprises and probably without 40 wins gets into the playoffs? Maybe it's the Magic. That'll be the last team we touch on today. All right, let's get Josh Lloyd on which of these youngsters you should jump on in fantasy.
Hi guys, it's Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball here to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers. We haven't seen Joel Embiid yet in the preseason, but I'm feeling pretty good about him being ready to start the regular season. There'll be some minutes limits, there'll be some back-to-back issues, but I think that if you can get him in the fourth round of a draft, it's fantastic because he has first-round potential, even if he doesn't quite get to that level this season. I think there's some really good value there. Ben Simmons is probably being a little bit overdrafted, but he's looked really good throughout the preseason. Those assists make it super valuable. I'm souring a little bit here on Markelle Fultz. Look, it's hard to judge too much from a couple of preseason games, but at the spot he's being drafted, there are other players that I would prefer around that spot. I also really like Robert Covington, who's going to get those defensive numbers. He'll score, he'll hit some threes, and I think you can get him at a decent level of value. Whereas players like Dario Saric and potentially Rashawn Holmes are probably being a little bit overdrafted at this point.
Good advice as always from Josh. Raptors, Wizards, Bucks, Magic still on the list. Some good previews coming. Today's show is also brought to you by Warby Parker. I always laugh when I go to look up my Warby Parker notes to do my read. I do a search on Warby Parker, and the first six things that come down are orders that I already have made with Warby Parker. So when I tell you I'm a Warby Parker person, I am not making that up. Jennings is my last purchase. I really like my Jennings. And they cost me $102 because Warby Parker, with their rebellious spirit, has created boutique quality eyewear at a revolutionary price point. Yes, prescription glasses starting as low as $95. That's anti-glare, anti-scratch coatings. It's all great. And you can take the home try-on program where you order five glasses, try them on for 5 days, no obligation. They just send them to you. Go to warbyparker.com locked. That's warbyparker.com locked. And you try them on. See which ones you like. Just and all at a reasonable price. Sunglasses start at $95, available with prescription starting at $175. It's incredible what you can get from Warby Parker, and they've done it with also the added part that there are all these people in the world who can't see, don't have eyeglasses, and so what do? Every time you order a pair, they give a pair away. It's eyeglasses with a purpose. 15% of the global population cannot effectively learn or work because they don't have glasses. And Warby Parker is taking care of that. It's just terrific company. They have great selections. Check it out, warbyparker.com/locked. I'm sure you'll like it as much as I do. Let's go to the Raptors. Big signings in the offseason. Do they finally break through? What's the cultural reset? Sean, what do you got for us with Locked On Raptors?
Hey, how's it going? Sean Woodley here from Locked On Raptors to give you your Locked On NBA season preview for the Toronto Raptors. Let's dive into the two or three biggest storylines for the Raptors coming into this season. Number one, I think it's a question of how ready the youth is going to be. This season, they're dedicating two-thirds of their roster to guys who were on their first NBA deals. They lost a lot of veterans over the course of the offseason. PJ Tucker, Patrick Patterson, Damari Carroll, Corey Joseph, all out the door. They only brought in CJ Miles as a replacement for those guys, and they're really banking on their development staff and their ability to find guys late in the draft in unheralded spots and turn them into NBA players. So DeLon Wright, the 20th overall pick a couple years ago, Norman Powell, who was a 46th overall pick, you got Pascal Siakam, who was a 27th pick, OG Anunoby, the 22nd pick this past season, Jakob Poeltl was the one lottery pick out of these guys, he was the number 9 pick. These guys are all being relied on heavily this season to really sort of turn the Raptors back into the bench into something that's productive, something that can give them real minutes and give them sort of a replacement for what the Raptors used to have in those reliable guys at the back end of the bench. Number two, I think it's the Raptors' commitment to changing their offense. You know, there's been a lot made, of course, of their offense over the last couple of years. In the playoffs, it really dies. It's very stagnant. It's very built around DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry having the ball in their hands a lot. A lot of pick and roll that's designed only to get them shots and not really as a spread pick and roll offense. And this season, it seems like the Raptors are trying to change that. There was a lot of talk in the offseason about a quote-unquote culture reset. That was the buzzword that was thrown around all summer long after Masai Ujiri spoke after the Raptors lost in the playoffs to the Cavs. And, you know, I think they're really going to try to commit themselves to changing their offensive scheme. We've seen in the preseason, the Raptors are passing a ton. They're shooting, you know, 30-plus threes in games. They had 43 three-pointers attempted in their first preseason game against the Clippers. They really seem like they're trying to change their shot chart, and it remains to be seen if old habits are going to die hard and if the Raptors are going to go back to what makes them really good. You know, the Raptors have had a lot of success. They've been a top-10 offense 4 years running, top five, I believe, 2 years in a row. And that's with DeMar DeRozan being a guy who's going to go from the mid-range. He's going to pick up a lot of free throws. Kyle Lowry, he's a very modern player. He can kind of fit into any system, but the Raptors have been so reliant on those two guys, and there's been a lot of talk this season, this preseason, Dwayne Casey talking about maybe DeMar DeRozan averages five fewer points than the 27 he averaged last year, but he averages four more assists. So that'll be an interesting sort of development to see over the course of the season if they can commit themselves to changing what has been a pretty good offense for the last 4 years, but has had some problems in the playoffs. In terms of what needs to happen for the Raptors to achieve their best case scenario this year, I think three or four of the young guys that I mentioned off the top really need to pop this season, and I think one of the young forwards, whether it's Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby, ideally one of those guys has to wedge themselves in as a go-to option in at the four late in games for the Raptors, freeing up Serge Ibaka to play center without leaving a gaping hole next to him. Last season, the Raptors were so good with Ibaka at center late in games with PJ Tucker playing power forward. Tucker's gone. They need someone to take up those minutes, and if Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby can get in there, that's really going to help the Raptors out. I think they they can make it work sometimes against certain matchups with CJ Miles at the 4, with Norm Powell playing the 3, but finding someone who can help rebound and defend bigger guys next to Ibaka when he's at the 5 is really going to give them a boost late in close games, and if it all comes together, this team could flirt with something like 56 wins like it did in the 2015-16 season. In terms of the worst-case scenario, you know, it just comes down to whether or not the young guys are ready. If they're not ready, if Norm Powell stagnates, proving sort of incapable of diversifying his offensive game, which right now is really just based on straight-line drives to the rim and not much else, if DeLon Wright and his shooting issues cap his usefulness, if Pascal Siakam remains the raw and unfinished guy that he is or was last season and has shown to be over the course of the summer, if OG Anunoby performs like most rookies tend to, this is all going to really hurt the Raptors. I think the top five guys on the team are good enough to ensure a floor of about 44 wins, but any wins on top of that are going to have to come as a byproduct of the development of the youth guys, and if those guys don't hit, if maybe only one of the five or so guys, you know, really has a good season, that could really hurt the Raptors' win total. As far as a player who's most likely to be thought of differently at the end of the season, I think I'm going to cheat here and say Dwayne Casey, who's a coach, of course. It seems like people have been questioning Casey for years. There's sort of a referendum on him as a coach every single offseason after the Raptors lose in the playoffs. He's notorious for being more of a reactive coach than one who's going to force opposing teams to adjust what he wants to do. But this season, he's really going to be forced into being creative. He's going to be forced into changing up the Raptors' offensive scheme. And while the shooting results for the Raptors so far in the preseason haven't been good, they've been pretty ugly overall, I do think the process has been there. I think the commitment to changing has been there from Casey. And I do think if the Raptors get back to 50-plus wins this season, and more importantly, prove that they're a worthy playoff team that doesn't really fall off once the playoff sort of intensity is ratcheted up, I do think Casey's going to end up deserving a lot of credit, and people will think a lot differently of him as a coach at the end of the year. If there's a player whose career trajectory is kind of riding on this season, I think it's Bruno Caboclo. He was the 20th overall pick back in 2014. He's entering the final year of his rookie deal at this point, and he has not really cracked his way into the NBA rotation. He's played very sparingly, and you know, there's a real chance that if he doesn't really show out this season, find a way into the Raptors rotation, he could be out of the league. There's a chance, though, if he gets into the lineup, he proves he can be an NBA rotation player, hits some corner threes, you know, defend using that incredible length that he has. He's shown in the D-League in the past that he's been a good defender. You know, he might receive another vote of confidence from the Raptors and get an extension or get a new contract to continue the development experiment with him, because he's still incredibly young. He's one of the youngest players in the league still, even though he's entering his fourth year. I think last season he was like the 19th youngest player on an NBA roster. So there's still a lot of sort of growth to be done by Bruno, but if it doesn't start showing this season, and the early returns in the preseason have not been great, I think there's some potential lurking that Bruno Caboclo could just be out of the league after this season. There's a rookie who's going to have an impact on the team. I mean, it's OG Anunoby. He was the first round pick for the Raptors. The Raptors, I don't think, were expecting him to fall to number 22, but they were happy to get him. And it's encouraging right now because he's taking part in 5-on-5 drills, which is ahead of what most people, I think, expected when he had that knee injury last winter. But I do think there's a real opportunity, as I mentioned, for him to soak up some high leverage minutes in the front court this year, because the Raptors don't have a lot of depth at the 4 or at the 3, really. So there's a chance for OG to get in there. Also keep an eye on Alphonso McKinney. He spent time overseas and in a D-League before the Raptors signed him to a partially guaranteed multi-year deal over the course of the summer. He could also be in that mix for some power forward minutes. He's been pretty decent in preseason. He's hit some corner threes. He's a ridiculous offensive rebounder and might be the best athlete on the Raptors roster right now. I'm assuming he's going to make the team out of camp, so keep an eye on Alphonso McKinney as sort of a sleeper rookie this season for the Raptors. As far as my best guess for how this season ends for the Raptors, I'm tempted to pick one of Toronto or Washington to ride their continuity to the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, but I'm a chicken, so I'm going to say the Raptors finish third in the East with, you know, 50 to 52 wins. I think they win a first-round series and then have a grueling seven-gamer with the Celtics in the second round, and I think they ultimately lose it, but I expect, you know, Norm Powell, DeLon Wright, Jakob Poeltl, Pascal Siakam, and maybe even OG Anunoby to really establish themselves this season as legit rotation players, and that's going to set themselves up next season for a lot higher expectations in year two of the three-year window that Masai Ujiri set up for the team with his moves this summer. That's going to do it for me. Thanks for tuning in. Tune into Locked On Raptors. Subscribe on iTunes. Follow me on Twitter at Woodley Sean, and thanks for listening.
Those last two points are really interesting. Continuity is going to be so interesting because Boston is so new. Washington, even with the Morris injury, has it. We'll hear from Ben Standing of Washington with Locked On Wizards here in just a second. And then second aspect of it is the way that Masai Ujiri has built this team. I mean, if those young guys click in at all, that team gets really good. The same way, really, Boston's relying on Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who are higher prospects, but they have larger roles. Really, really interesting roster building stuff going on in the Eastern Conference. How about your roster that you're building for fantasy basketball? Here's Josh Lloyd.
Hi guys, Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball here to talk about the Toronto Raptors. Kyle Lowry, really strong second round player. There had always been the concerns about him dropping off post All-Star break, and I'm not totally over those, but he's a fine player in that second to third round range. DeMar DeRozan's getting overdrafted, in my opinion. We know what he can do. We know his scoring. We know his free throw impact. But I just think that he's getting a little bit overdrafted. Doesn't mean I don't like him as a player, but I just think you have to pay a little bit too much to get him this season. Serge Ibaka, yeah, he's decent in those middle rounds, but he is taking a lot of threes and not really hitting them so far in preseason. So that's, I guess, a level of concern there. Valanciunas is being overdrafted, in my opinion, and that's because I think people are expecting him to play more than I think that he will. Whereas I love Norm Powell as a late round pick. If he can find himself 28 minutes a night, he should be able to find his way inside the top 140 pretty comfortably. And then there is upside to go even further than that.
The Eastern Conference is so interesting because Boston and Cleveland are anything but finished products. So which of the finished products can make the jump? We just heard Sean Woodley on the Raptors. Let's see what Ben Standing says about the possibility of it happening from the Washington Wizards.
Hey everyone, this is Ben Standing with the Locked On Wizards podcast here to preview the Wizards for the 2017-18 season. Among the top storylines going into camp, I'd say first and foremost, it's seeking a few good men. The Wizards had a tremendous starting lineup last season, but were often let down by a very weak second unit. Washington went out this offseason and acquired point guard Tim Frazier, shooting threat Jody Meeks, and forward Mike Scott in the hope to bolster that second unit. They're also hoping that a healthy Jan Mahimi and a progressing Kelly Oubre will give them a lineup when the starters sit that doesn't just let leads slip away the way they did 1 year ago. Also, when you talk about storylines, obviously, the Wizards have one of the better starting lineups in the league last year, but they're going to need more, even if the bench steps up. The Wizards will need their top players to go next level, specifically John Wall, Bradley Beal, Otto Porter. Now, John Wall's a four-time All-Star, so you know we're talking about a guy who's been very productive, but there's still more. There's another level he can get to, more better consistency on defense, and you know his perimeter shot remains unsteady. If he improves there, if Bradley Beal continues the evolution we saw last year with his dribble drive game, if Otto Porter, who signed a max contract this offseason, if he can truly become a third leading man for this offense, then the Wizards could legitimately challenge Cleveland and Boston for the top spot in the Eastern Conference. What needs to happen for the best case scenario? You know, I mentioned the starting five, but let's go to the bench where there's one player in particular, their only first-round pick on the roster from the last 4 years, who truly has tons of room to grow, and you can see the potential because of his impressive athleticism, and that is Kelly Oubre. He was essentially their de facto sixth man for most of last year, but an inconsistent one there. His three-point shot is always a wild ride. His individual defense is impressive, but his team concept needs work. Oubre is only 21. The potential is intriguing, but it's going into his third season, he needs to be more than just potential. He needs to be steady. It doesn't mean he has to be spectacular, but if he can truly raise his game to another level, that's probably the best case scenario for the Wizards to get to, say, 55 wins. What would lead to the worst case scenario? Boy, you know what? Their defense really labored for much of last season. And to some degree, we could give them a little bit of a pass because of the second unit struggles. The starters were asked to play heavy minutes and do so much that maybe that played a factor. I mentioned John Wall a moment ago with his defense. You know, if he is that head of the snake. If he is locked in, the rest of the team tends to play better on that end of the court. When he's not, and point guards are getting past him, things open up for the opponent. So defense in particular, it's not just John Wall by any stretch, who is one of the better defensive point guards in the league when fully engaged. So collectively as a whole. Otto Porter on the wing, can he be tough enough to defend small forwards? Marcin Gortat is not a shot blocking center. He's a good rebounder, but is he able to stay to battle some of the truly young bigs in this league? And what do the Wizards do when opponents pull out stretch fours and stretch fives? That's something they did struggle with a year ago. Player most likely to be thought of differently at the end of the season. I'm going to go with Jan Mahimi. Now, look, across the NBA, everybody kind of knows what Mahimi brings. He's a rebounding and defensive presence for teams. But last year, his first in Washington was a mess. He missed a large chunk of the regular season and about half of the playoffs because of injuries. And because of that, his contract, a four-year, $64 million deal, is viewed as a disaster. And I don't know if it will ever be viewed positively, but if Jan Mahimi can play 70 games, he's coming into camp in great shape, he's dropped weight. If he can play 70 or so games, I think what he will give the Wizards in terms of those rebounding and defensive keys will help them, whether it's the second unit, whether he's playing real minutes with the starter. I think Jan Mahimi will ultimately be viewed as a positive this season, but he's got to stay healthy. Player whose career trajectory is most impacted this season, either good or bad, give me Bradley Beal. He is yet to make an all-star team. I mean, not saying it's been a disaster. He's still only 24 years old, but he was on the cusp of making it a year ago. He then went out and had a tremendous postseason. And when you look at all the players that have left the East, it would be kind of stunning if Bradley Beal doesn't make the all-star team this year. And if he does, you know, that does give him a boost, I would think, with outside perception. If he doesn't, then we'd have to question kind of where things are going. But I'm not too worried. I think Bradley Beal is one of the better guards in the league. And I think what we saw last year with his trajectory is all positive. And I look for more good things out of him this year. Rookies who will have an impact? Nope. No rookies. The Wizards had no draft picks. They do have two of the two-way players, Mike Young and Devin Robinson, but they don't actually even have their own G League team, so they're going to have those guys bounce around a little bit. No rookies. There's nobody here. The Wizards have been trading away picks the last few years. They traded their first-round pick in 2017 in the Bojan Bogdanovic trade, so look elsewhere for your impactful rookies. As for how this season will unfold, hey, the Wizards have enough talent to win 53-55 games and legitimately challenge Boston and Cleveland for Eastern Conference supremacy. No disrespect to Toronto or Milwaukee, but I think the Wizards are right there in the mix. And it really comes down to, look, again, we don't want to talk about injuries all the time. They've already lost Markieff Morris, though, for potentially the first month of the season. If their starters can stay healthy, if Kelly Oubre in particular can make a leap, but same for the younger players, Bradley Beal, John Wall, Otto Porter, and if the bench guys, Tim Frazier, Jan Mahimi in particular as well, if they can be steady, they don't have to be spectacular, be steady, I think the Wizards can legitimately compete in the East. We'll soon find out. Ben Standing signing off for the Locked On Wizards podcast.
I don't think you can undervalue having Scott Brooks a second year. Coaches in their second years get more out of players with his connection with John Wall he's building. I like Washington. The Morris injury, a problem. The other one I really like about Washington is they have gotten rid of most of their below average pack players. Now, the one that is still below average is John Wall. Just because his three-point shooting is so poor and he only takes 14% of his shots as threes. But as they improve that bench a little bit, get rid of some of those other guys, Brandon Jennings, namely, Kelly Oubre takes the natural step, that could be kind of like Washington is what I'm trying to tell you. Let's see what Josh Lloyd thinks from a fantasy standpoint.
Hi guys, it's Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball talking about the Washington Wizards really like John Wall as an end of the first, start of the second round player, and Brad Beal is strong in that second round, third round range as that high efficiency shooting guard. Otto Porter, a lot of people overvalue him in fantasy. I think he's decent in the 50s and 60s range, but I think expecting him to be a top 30 player, which some people do, is a little bit of overkill. Marcin Gortat, I am way out on Gortat this season. He was outside the top 200 after the All-Star break last season when Jan Mahimi comes back. or came back. And I think that that could be a similar issue for him this season, just getting enough minutes. Remember, he was playing a ton of minutes before Mihinmi came back, and I don't think he's going to be getting that sort of playing time this season. So I feel like he is a wasted mid-round pick if that's where you get him. Kelly Oubre might be worth a flyer, especially if he starts the season with Marquise Morris sidelined. He might be worth a look, who's been decent in preseason, but I'm not sure he's going to be able to sustain that value long-term throughout the year.
So we think we know the top four in the East. We do? The Hornets thought they could break through. What about the Milwaukee Bucks? Frank Madden and Eric Neiman do one of the best shows on the Locked On Podcast Network. They've been killing it for a while, and they've got Giannis Antetokounmpo to talk about on a regular basis. So their world is good. How good? Let's see what they have to say.
Hey everyone, it's Frank Madden from Locked On Bucks. My co-host Eric Name and I talk Milwaukee Bucks basketball every day, and actually it's kind of become pretty fun to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks, which is weird to say as a lifelong Bucks watcher and fan. Not a lot to cheer for the past 25 years in Milwaukee, but you look at this Bucks team heading into the 17-18 season, it's still a very young roster, and really the question is, you know, can the continuity they have going from last year into this year, can the organic growth of their young players, you know, can that translate into potentially a contender for home court in the East? A year ago, they win 42 games. They challenged the Toronto Raptors in the first round of the playoffs, fall short, but certainly a lot of expectations that they're going to be able to overcome some of their issues last year, especially on the defensive end. Can that defense make a big turnaround? That's a huge storyline coming into this season. And otherwise, you know, I think the other big talking point is, you know, the Bucks' big three, and yet again, it's on pause. The good news, Giannis Antetokounmpo has elevated his game into the league's elite. He was second-team All-NBA, second-team All-Defense last year, just 22 years old coming into the season. He's starting the first year of a four-year, $100 million contract. That's a bargain by any metric you might throw at it. And he's made major leaps every season. So how much better can he get? You know, is he going to be a legit MVP candidate for the next decade? Certainly that is the hope in Milwaukee. Having a better jump shot would certainly help, but we've been saying that for the last few years, and he's continued to get better and better. So hopefully we'll see him become more of a maybe an average threat from the perimeter this year. And you know, the other guys he's got on the wing, Chris Middleton, a guy who a year ago had just torn his hamstring, might have missed the entire year, comes back, makes a nice impact for them. Obviously, the hope is with him coming in healthy that he's going to be able to take on a bigger role, especially with, unfortunately, Jabari Parker recovering from his second ACL tear. So we're not going to really see that trio at full strength again this season, but difficult decisions are going to have to be made next summer with Jabari hitting restricted free agency. He is eligible for an extension, but difficult to see the two sides coming to an agreement given where his health is and given, you know, some of the questions about his game. So thinking about this team, what kind of has to happen to hit their best case scenario? And I think the obvious starting point is defense. They've been in the bottom third of the league defensively the last 2 years. They were really good in Jason Kidd's first year, but the way they play stylistically, very aggressively, they give up tons of corner threes. A lot of questions about whether that style, especially in a league that is emphasizing three-point shooting more than ever, can that style work? And really no excuses for them not to get a defense that finishes top 10 this year in my book. They have all the guys that you'd need to. Jabari's hurt. He's probably by far their worst defender. You can't blame him if this defense doesn't live up to expectations this year. So I think that's the big question. The other things really, other than the defense improving, you know, Malcolm Brogdon, Thon Maker, guys who had very nice rookie seasons a year ago, can they continue to take next steps? Can Greg Monroe, really underrated fulcrum of that second unit, can he continue to do what he did a year ago as a sixth man? If those things happen, if Giannis continues to improve, I think certainly this is a team that can challenge for a 50-win season. Now, worst case scenario, other than injuries, obviously, you know, again, go to the defense. Do they finish below average once again? Do they let opponents Moriball them, hitting corner threes and layups? That would be the worst case scenario. That could get Jason Kidd fired. And again, also just, you know, looking at some of these guys that you're expecting to improve or expecting to maintain the high level play that they showed a year ago. You know, if Brogdon and Maker don't improve at all, if guys like Tony Snell, you know, regress after shooting 40% from three last year, if some of those things happen, then certainly this could be a team that, you know, becomes average to below average offensively and potentially similarly on the defensive end. In terms of players most likely to be thought of differently, I'd go back to Middleton. You know, again, he's a guy that I think smart basketball fans know that he's a really valuable piece in the modern NBA. But in the East, with, you know, this mass exodus of talent, especially on the wing to the West, there are spots to be won on the All-Star team. And if Chris Middleton can improve his scoring, you know, again, 20 points per game, maybe that's the magic number that, that voters need to think of Chris Middleton as an All-Star. But either way, he's going to do really important things for the Bucks, and certainly be great to see him continue to do what we know he's capable of and hopefully get some of that recognition as well. In terms of players whose career trajectory will be most impacted this season, Brogdon and Maker, certainly two guys coming off of a really encouraging rookie seasons. A year ago, I don't think anybody thought the two of them would be starting in a playoff game, but they did. Brogdon, I think, you know, the question with him is, can he continue to be a consistent three-point shooter? He showed that a year ago, which I think surprised a lot of us. And making that transition to the NBA point guard spot, you know, after not really being a point guard in college, so impressed with what he's done. He's a terrific kid, great worker. No questions about him or Maker in terms of character. You know that they're going to put in the work. But again, can he become an average NBA point starting point guard? That's a high bar that nowadays, and certainly that's a big question. And at 24 years of age, going on 25, certainly Brogdon is not, you know, sort of this young kid who's still figuring things out. As for Maker, you know, again, a guy who went from being in high school to a guy that was, you know, playing NBA center a year ago, that's an incredible transition to make, especially given that he's still adding strength. He showed the ability to knock down three-pointers when open, and I think the question is, can he continue to do that? Can he add maybe a little bit? Can he become a better finisher around the basket, get stronger? And then defensively, you know, can that mobility and shot blocking, can he improve on the defensive glass a little bit? But can he do all those things together? If he can, you know, he may not have superstar upside, but I think he has a really high floor. He's a guy that could be a really ideal role player to play alongside the Bucks, the rest of the Bucks starters. And then Jabari, obviously, probably doesn't make a huge impact on the court this season, projected to come back maybe around the All-Star break, but just getting on the court and looking like the same guy physically will obviously play a huge role in what his next contract looks like and whether the Bucks, you know, want to pay him a huge, huge dollar contract in order to keep him around long term. They don't have a lot of financial flexibility, and certainly what they do with Parker is probably the biggest question mark they have. And even if he does come back healthy, you know, again, one of the probably the league's worst help defenders, you know, again, can he improve his game even if he is healthy? That's still a big question. In terms of rookies, you know, certainly we didn't think the two rookies a year ago would make a big impact, and they did. Similar for this year, DJ Wilson and Sterling Brown, guys who figured to battle for rotation minutes, but difficult to project them making a real impact this season. Wilson probably battles Mirza Teletovic for the backup four spot behind Giannis, and Brown will battle Rashad Vaughn, Jason Terry, maybe Gerald Green if he makes a roster for minutes at the 2-3 spots. My best guess on how the season ends, you know, the Vegas over-under is at 47.5. I think 45 or 46 is more likely. I'd probably take the under. You know, again, I think Giannis cements his place as a legit MVP candidate moving forward. But again, I worry that they'll once again fall short of their potential defensively. And, you know, if they do, that doesn't mean that, again, they're going to be battling for a playoff spot. I think the fifth seed in the East is a very reasonable goal, especially with the drop-off there after the top four, but might be very difficult to displace Toronto or Washington in the top four. So things certainly looking on the up in Milwaukee, but we've said that before, and I think, you know, the difference is time. The Bucks have Giannis Antetokounmpo. They never had a guy like that before, and certainly he's going to make the Bucks a fun team to watch moving forward, and I think the question is, can they make that big step this year? Again, this has been Frank Madden for Locked on Bucks. Check us out. Eric Name, my co-host, is on Twitter at Eric_Name. I'm at FMaddenMBA. Check us out on Twitter, and of course, follow us on the Locked on Bucks podcast all season. Thanks.
Frank, Eric, do great work. Frank, good breakdown there. I'm going to be honest. I might be dead wrong because Giannis is about to take that step. If Giannis takes that step, another step, which would just be remarkable after last season, then this is all irrelevant. But part of me feels like Milwaukee is the team that disappoints this year. I don't actually have good reason for that, though. If you look at them, they really match a lot of what the pack system likes most, which is that almost every player is above average. Matthew Dellavedova, the one who's not, and so is considerably not, and maybe his minutes actually fall off a little bit. So there's an argument that some of it has to do with the coaching and the approach that their defense has when the Milwaukee Bucks allow more corner threes than anyone in the NBA. And it's such an important shot that if that's in your defensive DNA that you allow that, to me there's just a flaw in their systems. If they can fix that flaw, maybe that makes them a better team this upcoming year, and then they don't have, then I don't have the same thing that I'm discussing right now. But that to me is such, their whole defensive scheme allows threes at a rate so much higher than everyone else in the NBA that I actually just think that eventually that bites them. But they did it last year and it only moderately bit them. So maybe none of that has any value. Josh Lloyd does, though.
Hi, guys. It's Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball here. Giannis Antetokounmpo is definitely in the conversation to be the number one player in fantasy this season. If you took him with your number one pick, I think that's totally fine. Whereas Chris Middleton, who now is fully healthy, a full season ahead of him, he's got a chance to return to being a top 25 sort of player. And you can get him in maybe the third or fourth round outside pick 40, which is a significant steal there. Malcolm Brogdon's got that point guard role on lockdown. He is a bargain and he should be a top 75 guy. While Greg Monroe is only going to be limited by the minutes that Jason Kidd gives him. If he got 28 minutes a game, he'd be a top 60 sort of player, but I just don't think we can expect that out of him, especially with Thon McCur likely to be the starting center for this team. Jabari Parker, I wouldn't want anything to do with him. He's not coming back till February, and you can't just hold on to someone for 4 months without any sort of impact from them during the season.
As we keep talking about those teams that might break through in the Eastern Conference, if I could pick the team who I would like to have them break through, it would be the Orlando Magic. One, I like Frank Vogel. I think he's a great coach. Two, their poor fan base has gone through just nothing good since Dwight Howard left. Three, Philip Rossman-Reich, who hosts Locked On Magic, does an amazing job with the website Orlando Magic Daily, as well as does a great job with this podcast, and he deserves something good to talk about. He's got a great rookie, I'll tell you that. Here is Philip.
Hello, everyone. This is Philip Rossman-Reich, the site expert and editor over at OrlandoMagicDaily.com and the host of Locked On Magic, here to talk to you for the next five or six, seven, eight, something minutes like that about the Orlando Magic. Yes, I promise you, they are still a real team. And this Magic franchise has been in a little bit of a precarious situation really ever since the Dwight Howard trade of 2012. It's been 5 years, and that should be enough time to rebuild. But the Magic have had a lot of change and a lot of missteps in their rebuild. And they found themselves last year trying to push all their chips into the middle and coming out with nothing. They spent a lot of money on Bismack Biyombo. They re-signed Evan Fournier to a big deal. They gave a big contract to DJ Augustin. And they came out with a 29-win season, a 6-win decrease from the previous year with, you know, albeit with a new coach and with players not fitting where they wanted to fit. And so, obviously, that meant change was on the way. And the Magic's biggest change this season was not from a player personnel standpoint. In fact, the roster is pretty much the same as it was to finish last season after they traded Serge Ibaka to the Toronto Raptors at the trade deadline. The biggest change was in the front office, with the Magic hiring Toronto Raptors general manager Jeff Weltman. So really, this season for the Orlando Magic is what I've been calling on Locked On Magic a no-lose season. Of course, we're not talking about the Magic competing for championships or anything, but the Magic essentially decided we need to sit back and evaluate what we have. We're new people in charge here. We've got to form our own opinions on the roster. And to be honest, what value does anyone on a 29-win team have, especially when you're a capped-out 29-win team? So essentially, the Magic are banking on a few things. That the way that they finished last season is something that can carry over to this season. Now, you might be saying, well, that 29-win team, who cares how you finished? Well, the Magic completely changed the way that they play. They went from a too-big system to a much more fast-paced run-and-gun system to end last season. And the starting lineup actually played pretty well. Orlando finished last year with the starting lineup of Elfrid Payton, Evan Fournier, Terrence Ross, Aaron Gordon, and Nikola Vucevic. That starting lineup had a plus, I believe it was plus 2.4 net rating. It was a positive net rating and averaged something like 112 points per 100 possessions. That certainly suggests that the team could be able to take a step up, or at the very least play like a 500 team. And in this Eastern Conference, a 500 team gets you where you want to go. Or at least a lot of people believe that 500 will be more than enough to reach the playoffs. So there is what I'd like to say, cautious optimism about the Orlando Magic. I don't think anyone is prepared to immediately put this team into the playoffs anytime soon. But It certainly can happen. So what needs to happen for the Magic to get here? Well, their bench needs to take a step up. That was where the Magic focused a lot of their changes and a lot of their adjustments this summer in free agency. Last year's bench was one of the worst benches in the entire league, and it got even worse after the All-Star break. So when you replace Jeff Green, when you replace Mario Hezonja with solid veterans like Aaron Aflalo, like rookie Jonathan Isaac, like Jonathan Simmons, you at least believe that your bench is going to be better. Of course, the proof will be in the pudding. The Magic, though, still have some very, very big issues to deal with. And if you're someone like me who watched the Magic, you'd say, certainly, this team played better after the All-Star break, and the stats certainly back that up. But they also don't back that up, in that the Magic went 8-16 after the All-Star break. And a .333 win percentage in your final 24 games would project out to a 27-win season. How much of that is the bench? I don't know. But I would also say that the Magic still lost some games by 30 points that they shouldn't have lost. That, you know, no team should lose by 30 points in any game. It happens occasionally, but the Magic had six games last year where they lost by 30 or more points. That signals something much deeper about this team. And so rolling back the same lineup maybe doesn't get rid of some of the inherent problems. And some of the biggest problems for the Magic include their lack of three-point shooting. Adding Terrence Ross helps, and I think that the idea of Terrence Ross as a shooter does have value and does help the Magic spread the floor for a guy like Elfrid Payton to attack and a guy for Aaron Gordon to attack and even to a guy like Nikola Vucevic to post up. But this is still a Magic lineup that does not have a lot of shooting. Evan Fournier is a solid three-point shooter. He shot about 35% from beyond the arc last year. Terrence Ross, thought of as a solid three-point shooter, he shot about 33% from beyond the arc. Elfrid Payton is not likely to take a big step up in his shooting, and neither is Aaron Gordon. So this is still a Magic team that lacks a lot of three-point shooting and lacks a go-to offensive option. It's hard to say exactly who this team's best offensive player is. And so while that starting lineup seemed to work really well together after the All-Star break last year, who knows just how good this team is going to be offensively? And that doesn't even get into the defense. Like I said, they had a 112 offensive rating. That starting lineup had a 110 defensive rating. So it's hard to tell what's real and what isn't about this Magic team. And of course, that uncertainty would lead you to believe that probably not a safe team to bet on. But I do, like I said, I do think there is reason to be cautiously optimistic. And I think it goes to the one player that we're probably going to think of very differently at the end of the season. That is Aaron Gordon. Yes, Aaron Gordon, now 22 years old, has played 3 years in the NBA and has been kind of thrown all over the place. He had played most of last season at small forward, where he wasn't a good fit because of his lack of shooting and ability to attack off the dribble. But in addition to that, he's never had the same coach for consecutive years. He's never had a healthy summer ever in his NBA career. Every time it seemed like Gordon was about to take a leap, something got in his way to stop or halt his development. You look at his rookie year, he broke his foot about a month into the season, missed 50-some-odd games. You look at his second year, he broke his jaw in the summer, so he wasn't able to reap the benefits of the improvement you usually see before a player's sophomore year. You look at last year, he was playing out of position at small forward, and not only on top of that, he had a serious ankle sprain right before camp and missed the first week of camp, so that's a lot of time that he didn't get to get used to his teammates, to get used to his coaches. So that is why I think it's a time to buy Aaron Gordon stock. Last year after the All-Star break, when the Magic went to a smaller lineup and Gordon played at the four, he averaged about 16.7 points per game, about 17 points per game. So this is a guy that seems like he's about ready to make a big leap. Another guy that I think you got to take a look on, either good or bad, is probably Nikola Vucevic. Nikola Vucevic saw his numbers decline last year down to 14 points per game, played a lot more on the perimeter. He's getting ready to enter a contract year. He's got 2 years left on his deal. And the Magic are, you know, they probably didn't make it very clear to him that he's the starter, even though I think he is, by signing that big contract to Bismack Biyombo. If the Magic are looking to make a trade, Nikola Vucevic is going to have his name surface there as well. As far as the rookies to keep an eye on, Jonathan Isaac, the sixth overall pick in the draft, is probably going to be one of the slower developers among the top guys in this draft. That doesn't mean he's not extremely talented, but he plays the 3-4, kind of the same type of switchy, rangy, athletic position that Aaron Gordon plays. And so I think that it wouldn't surprise me to see Isaac develop a lot slower. He's going to come off the bench. He's going to play limited minutes. And the Magic are going to ask him to do things very simply. Just play solid, energetic defense and make shots when you're open. They're not going to put him on the ball a lot. So I think you probably won't see him in the Rookie of the Year conversation. There may be some people who are saying, oh, he's not performing because his numbers don't look good. But that doesn't mean he's not playing well. So I think he's a guy to keep an eye on, but probably a little bit down the road. To close this out, how will this season end for the Orlando Magic? I think that they're a better team than they were last year. This is not the same 29-win team. And I think that they, you know, even if things go moderately okay, I think that they'll improve on that mark. How much so? I don't know. I think that's going to depend a lot on the momentum of the season and how young guys develop, especially Aaron Gordon. I'm particularly high on Aaron Gordon. So I would say this Magic team is probably going to be in that 33 to 36 win range. I think if the Magic could get back to that 35 win mark that they were at two seasons ago when they were coached by Scott Skiles, that would get the team back going in the right direction. That would probably mean that Aaron Gordon had a bit of a breakout year. And if the Eastern Conference is as bad as we all think, the Magic might be playing some meaningful games deep into the season and in that playoff race, and who knows what happens after that. Thanks, everyone, for entertaining me here and listening to a little bit about the Orlando Magic, not a team that many people talk about in the national conversation, but keep an eye on them. Aaron Gordon is good for hashtag one highlight per game. This has been Philip Rossman-Reich of Locked On Magic. I'll send it back to David.
I hope good things for you. Same thing on Vogel. Another year in the system. Another way to be able to instill his systems. I think they take a jump. I think they're better than people realize. Who do you take in fantasy? Let's let Josh Lloyd chime in.
Hi, guys. This is Josh Lloyd from Locked On Fantasy Basketball, here to talk about the Orlando Magic. Aaron Gordon is a significant steal in fantasy drafts, and he has top 50 upside. He's looked fantastic in the preseason. I also think that Alfred Payton could potentially be a top 50 guy. If not top 50, then definitely a top 60 player. While Nikola Vucevic should bounce back from a disappointing season last year, and he should be a strong guy to target in those first 3 to 4 rounds. Terrence Ross is starting over John Simmons. That doesn't make him more than a late round pick to me. While I'm really liking what I'm seeing from John Isaac, I'm just not sure he's going to be getting enough minutes to be a consistent fantasy contributor this season. But in terms of long-term value for a guy like Isaac, his dynasty potential is through the roof, and I really like getting my hands on him in one of those deeper type leagues.
Thank you very much, Josh. Josh done a great job. What a great addition to our previews. And to the hosts who just chimed in on Indiana, as Tony East stopped by, Miami, Wes Goldberg, and Dave Vermill. James Mercita, the Knicks, thank you very much. Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia 76ers, Locked On Sixers. Sean Woodley's Locked On Raptors. Ben Standing's Locked On Wizards. Frank Madden carrying the Locked On Bucks show today, and Philip Rossman-Reich on Locked On Magic. That wraps up our Eastern Conference previews. If you didn't catch number one, it's on the Locked On NBA feed. I'll be releasing my pack ratings on the Eastern Conference later this week on LockedOnJazz.net. So if you want to check that out, LockedOnJazz.net, that'll be available for you to give you my offensive predictions on how the Eastern Conference will rank out this year. That the Western Conference will be up here very shortly as well. Western Conference number 2 coming to you later in the week. Thank you to SeatGeek, promo code LOCKED, and Warby Parker, warbyparker.com/locked. This has been Locked On NBA. Subscribe to your local favorite team podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Have a great day.